We're going to take your phone calls this hour with PMH Atwater. With her work, near-death experiences, the rest of the story next hour. We'll have open lines for you right here on Coast to Coast AM. PMH, before we take some calls and also get more into your work, near-death experiences, tell me about the critics, and I'll give you my my rationale for that.
Well, I'm getting so many, and the attacks are equally vicious as they have been in the past. And I've had a lot of newspaper reviews of the book. Most of them have been really good. But none of them have touched on the material in the second half of the book. So I went back and I talked to several of these reporters. And I said, you know, tell me why you won't mention the material in the second half of the book, because that's new, that's exciting. Nobody else in the field or, in fact, in the world is talking about this. I'm the first one. Why didn't you mention that? And they're all saying the same thing. Either they didn't understand it, they were confused by it, or they were afraid of it. Now think about that. The first half of the book is a summation of my near-death research. Chapter 16 changes everything because I talk about the key being being stress. That idea of intensity, it comes from stress. That's the pusher. That's what pushes you off the cliff in these threshold experiences. You know, imagine yourself on top of a high mountain and somebody comes up and gives you a push off. So here you are out in space. It doesn't matter what you think or what you feel. You know, you can't hold on to anything. All you can do is either just crash or surrender. And it's in that surrendering that the other half of the story occurs. So we get into the second half of the book, where I talk about the new Christology, where I talk about what Christ consciousness really is, not the buzzwords, where I get into the biological imperative and the threshold experience and all this kind of stuff. And I finally come to realize that all of these people, they're really responding in the same way. And what they're saying to me is, I'm afraid of the second half of the book. And I'm just floored, because I thought, you know, people would be more prepared for that. They'd be more open to that. It would make better sense to them.
Well, it's probably not a lot. Let me tell you what I have learned from the internet, as wonderful as it is. You also get a small group of people who are very unhappy with their own existence, and they hate. They hate what you do. They hate what I do. They hate what everybody does. And they spend their time, because they have nothing else to do, sitting down, hating books, critiquing books and stuff. Look, PMH, honest criticism, critique, I think is healthy. It's very important.
Oh, yeah.
That's how you learn. That's how I learn.
Sure.
But, you know, but the hate mongers, the vicious people, you know what? I don't even care about them anymore. And I think that's probably some of the things you're experiencing. People who just don't have any life. They sit at their computer and they just type these things. And I bet most of them who hate have not even read your book. That's my take.
Well, I'm willing to accept that. What I'm hearing, though, the latter part of what I said, people who have read the book, who just don't understand the second half, therefore they're afraid of it. And that makes me kind of step back and say, wait a minute here, aren't people willing to think? Aren't they willing to look? Aren't they willing to wake up? Aren't they willing to see what's right in front of their nose?
Yeah, really. Let's take some calls, and then we'll talk more about your work. We'll go to Niles, Michigan. Great town. Melissa's there, east of the Rockies. Welcome to Coast to Coast. Hi, Melissa.
Hi, George. How are you guys tonight?
Great. We're good. Thank you.
Great. I was just wondering, I've never had a near-death experience. I have just the opposite, where I know when one of my family members is going to pass. But my grandmother, when I was 16, she had spoke to me about when she had her near-death experience, that a lady in black came talk to her, and that it told her it wasn't her time to go yet, but soon. When she had her stroke and she only survived about a week, she always told everybody that the lady in black is at the foot of my bed telling me it's almost time to come home. And then when my dad, Pat, was getting ready to pass, he had said his mother had floated to him with his stepfather, and his stepfather said he had said to his dad that he wasn't ready to go, and he's like, "Oh, I won't take you now, but soon." Right. I was wondering if she, you know, if you've talked to other family members that have had others passed where the other family had talked to them about their near-death experiences and just before their passing.
Well, just about anybody who's about ready to pass will be greeted by visitors. And they don't have to be people who've ever had a near-death experience. This is very, very common. In fact, about 80 to 88% of all people who are on the deathbed will be greeted by visitors. Most of your nurses know about this. They're alerted. When the individual starts talking about physical beings, they're starting to see, whether it's loved ones, whether it's strangers, whether it's animals, doesn't matter. The visitors begin to come. And what's really interesting to me is these visitors almost always come in from the left. Once in a while, they're at the edge of the bed. Once in a while, they're above. Once in a while, they're on the right. But most people who talk about the visitors, whether they be at the deathbed or people who are sensitive or who begin to see this on their own, why left?
Are you saying the dead are liberals? I'm kidding.
No, I didn't mean to say that. But they're coming in from the left. And I'm saying, why left? And I'm talking to all kinds of sensitive people and psychic people, and again and again and again, I'm hearing, the other worlds are, you know, you can see them to the left, or the visitors come from the left, or guidance seems to come to the left, mostly, you know, not always, but mostly from the left. And then I did a little digging around, George, and what I discovered is that nature prefers the left. On Earth, all amino acids of all living things twist to the left. In space, most spiral galaxies rotate to the left.
That's right.
Nature prefers left. And so when our loved ones are beginning to pass over, or when, you know, let's say you're a masseuse and you're starting to get guidance when you're massaging someone, and, you know, you're reporting these images or voices or beings from the left, it's absolutely natural, normal, and actually adds validity to what these people are reporting.
That's interesting. Unless you're a clock. A clock goes to the right.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Let's go to Dan in San Diego, California. Hey, Dan, thanks for calling.
Well, thank you, George. I turned in a little bit late, so I never got to your guest name.
PMH Atwater, one of the living legends of near-death experience. PMH Atwater.
Okay. Yeah, I'm here in San Diego. George, before I get into it, I discovered your channel when I was living in Mexico. It was the only American channel I get, and I got addicted to Art Bell. And God bless you, man. I think you're the one of the most wonderful human beings, and always treats your guests and callers with understanding, compassion, and love. And so I thought, you must have had a good mother.
Yes, I still do. She's 82 now, Daniel.
Well, God bless her. I'll start out like this. A lot of my experiences, George, maybe paralleled yours, as I grew up as a Catholic, insofar as I even went to a seminary and had that, you know, traditional Catholic upbringing.
And,
and then I was in the Navy. I was a Navy air aboard the Coral Sea and so on and so forth. But anyway, here's what happened is I met a lady when I was about 19, and I was having some troubles, and she said, you know, she recommended I see this her friend, this doctor, and I went to him once, and then the second time I went to him, he hypnotized me, which is not like a parlor trick. At any rate, I started doing this, and I got deeper and deeper and deeper into the state of relaxation, and kind of gave myself positive thinking and talk and so on and so forth. Well, one time, and I really got so deep, and I just knew it was time to get up, and I opened my eyes, so to speak, and here I am floating over my body. I didn't know what the heck this was, but what went through me is, first off, I thought, boy, I sure am glad to get out of that thing that's been weighing me down, and I thought, I know I need to prove to myself that this is really happening. And I was laying on a bed, and there was a huge mirror, and here I was. I was looking at my body, which looked exactly the same, in a mirror, and I was kind of translucent, and I could see my other body, this one I'm in right now, laying on this bed. And here's what happened. I went into another room. You go right through walls, and my family couldn't see me, and I saw where they all were. I did this to kind of reassure myself that this was really happening. But you don't really think. You just know stuff. And here's what I knew. I knew, A, I always was, and I always will be.
That's
simple
so
as that.
True. So true, so true,
so true. We don't die. And I was in contact with my higher self, your spiritual self, whatever you want to call it. And it changed my life. I've never been afraid of death ever since I was 19 years old. And I discovered other things. This lady told me about Edgar Casey. I don't know. Hey, you know, I told her, well, hey, look at if you can't be true with reincarnation because there's more people on Earth than there ever was, you know, all that sort of rational stuff. But I became more, I guess, intuitive. I had a lot of other spiritual experiences and so on and so forth. And like I said, you don't think, you just know.
What do you think of that?
And it was like, hey, this is it. I really am.
It is almost identical to a near-death experience, PMH, isn't it?
Right. It's a spiritually transforming experience. And if you get one that's intense enough, then it changes the body as well as the mind.
Well.
And that's what's happening now.
And it is happening more and more. Do events trigger this too?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Absolutely. Yes. Anything can trigger it, but it'll always be that same basic pattern of the threshold experience. And this is what the fellow just described. He went through a threshold experience. He didn't go quite deep enough, I don't think, to get the full effect, but he certainly went far enough to change him and to change his idea of life, his idea of himself. He got into that realm of knowing.
And what a great way to experience the other side without having to stay there. I mean, life is to be enjoyed,
right?
And to be cherished. I'm not in any hurry to move on, but it's kind of a nice feeling to know there's something else out there, isn't it?
Well, you're changing right now. Your consciousness is moving higher and higher, bigger and bigger, greater and greater right now. You're moving into knowing right now. So that idea of the biological imperative, that idea that you are evolving, is happening to you, and it's happening right now. You don't have to die to do it.
No, that's true. David in Chicago, where I'll be in the morning at my speech at the Health Freedom Expo. David, thanks. Go ahead.
Good morning.
Morning.
It sure is a pleasure to finally be able to speak with you. I've been a fan of your show for several years now. I retired from the police department out of the state of Colorado for the city of Denver, and I've listened to you all over the country. What I have to say is kind of in line with a little bit of what you've been saying, George, and a little bit of what your guest has been saying. She talked about how people would critique the things that she said or even criticize, and,
mm-hmm.
and how she mentioned earlier in the first hour that some people were afraid to talk about their experience. I think the reason I've kept it kind of quiet for a long time was because I'm a Christian man and from a fundamentalist group, if you will, and this is something that a lot of the pastors and teachers in our sect, if you will, don't want to hear about. I had been going through some medical issues with my heart, and they found that I had a little bit of a mitral disorder in the heart, and I was laying in bed one night, and I thought I was asleep, and then the next thing I knew, I was physically up above the bed, laying still in the same position I was, but raised up off the bed, and then there was like dark clouds in front of my eyes, with that sort of look of the sun peeking through the clouds and little yeah. electrical impulses coming away from the center of the bright light. And I actually reached over and down to touch my wife to be sure to myself that I just wasn't dreaming. And then I just carefully and quietly and slowly lowered back to the bed and woke her up and told her what was going on. And she was like, "You were just dreaming. You were just dreaming." But it's strange that, you know, we've got to be quiet about certain things, because then in the same realm, that same church will talk about experiences that the secular world won't believe could ever take place, like the Great Flood and Moses parting the Red Sea. They'll That's believe right. in those things, but they don't want to hear about these near-death experiences or spiritual experiences that are unexplainable to them.
Yeah, they don't take it the full distance, and they should. That to me, that's exactly what you're experiencing, not a dream at all. Though, PMH, some people do dream like this, don't they?
Well, yes, but first of all, I want to say how thrilling it is to me to hear the voice of a former police officer. You know, I mean, again, I'm a cop's kid, so I just love talking to police officers. that reminds me of my own.
As long as they're not peering in through the window of your car, writing you a ticket.
Well, even then, I kind of congratulate them because they're doing their job. But first of all, I want to say, out of body experiences, all of us have them. Whether we, you know, admit it or not, even as a kid, different times in our life, we have these.
Let's talk more about that. Hold on, PMH. Let's talk about out-of-body experiences, because you're right. A lot of people experience this. Some don't know exactly what they are. We'll be back. Well, it's Friday night, so time for our traditional shout-out, and thanks for supporting Coast to Coast AM. Those of you listening to your favorite radio stations across North America, thank you so much. Coast Insiders, formerly Streamlink, thank you, of course. And then XM Talk, Channel 168, and the various chat rooms and groups out there. The various websites, of course, which would include the Fantastic Forum 2, Fantastic Forum 2 with a number 2, Into Infinity, Imaginative Worlds, National Radio Club, Sorcery IRC, the MySpace group, Yahoo Chat, Northern Kentucky Paranormal Group, Above Top Secret, the SoCal UFO Meetup Group. How about those Hollywood ghost hunters? And our friend Greg the Cook in St. Louis, who's getting smacked with storms as we speak. Thanks for supporting Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast this hour. We have PMH Atwater, near-death experiences, the rest of the story. Would you say that out-of-body experiences are almost like the death experience? PMH?
No, not necessarily. I would not say that. An out-of-body experience often occurs whenever your brain or mind shifts into another level. For instance, especially children, when they get a fever, often will have out-of-body experiences. That idea of shifting from the mind that's normal to us.
That's what happened to me when I was 11 years old. I had a fever, woke up. I was bouncing against the ceiling. I had no idea what was going on. I looked down. I saw my body ram me right back into it. Never been able to duplicate it ever since, but that was one of the episodes that got me on this mission.
Right, that's what often happens to children. With adults, usually they get drunk, they're drinking, they have out-of-body experiences. Maybe they're taking drugs, they have an out-of-body experience. When you're just going to sleep or just waking up from sleep, you often have out-of-body experiences. When you're in yoga, certain types of yoga really create the space for that to occur. So out-of-body experiences are really functional in everyday life. Lots of people have them, but we don't normally talk about it, but we're having them. So I don't equate an out-of-body experience with the coming of death necessarily, because when you're talking about that kind of out-of-body experience, you're talking about something far more intense than the regular kind.
Okay, let's go to the phones again. Let's go to Houston, Texas. It's Diana's turn on Coast to Coast. Hi, Diana.
Hi.
Hey.
Thank you so much for taking my call. Just a second.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I had my speakerphone on. Can you hear me?
Yep. Go ahead.
Okay. I had an out-of-body experience when I had fever. I was also 11 years old, and I had, they called it jungle fever, but I think it was like mono. And I would have fever, and I would shake convulsively where the whole hospital bed would bang against the wall. And I had the out-of-body experience to where it was like my body, I looked out the window and I saw a couple of cousins playing in the courtyard, and they were talking about that I had died. And my reaction was like, And after that, I was never afraid of death. I mean, that was it. It was real simple. I didn't see the light or anything like that. It was just strange, you know. And as a kid in the Southern Baptist, there wasn't anybody to talk to about it.
No,
so I never did. Yeah. But the thing I wanted to ask your guest is when she was talking about the when they're visited at the end, they always come from the left. Physically, men and women are feminine on the left side and masculine on the right. And I'll take my answer off the air. I was just wondering if somehow that has anything to do with the left.
I don't know. What do you think, PMH?
No, it doesn't. Male or female doesn't make any difference about left. And they don't always come from the left, but the majority of them do. I want to speak, though, to her experience of having died with the fever. A lot of kids do this. A lot of the children that I worked with had their near-death experience or their death experience connected with fever. That's fairly common. Most of the children that I worked with had their experience come from drowning, but a lot of them also from fever. And of course, children most of them have very simple experiences. Usually it's just like one thing, or maybe it's a couple of things that occur. So what this woman is describing is just right on with what normally happens with children. And even her expression, even her feeling about it is typical of a child, because it's a child often will toss these off. You know, I mean, what's that? They have no way of making any kind of comparison.
Comparison, yeah, no basis for anything.
Right, especially if they're really young.
Well, that's a good point. Let's go to Scottsdale, Arizona. It's David's turn, wild card line. Hi, David, go ahead.
Hi, George and PMH Atwater.
Yeah,
you got it.
I couldn't have gotten in on a better night. And number one, George, you made me laugh a few minutes ago because I've only ever had one out-of-body experience, and I had it after reading Edgar Casey's Sleeping Prophet, and then I got into a book on out-of-body experiences, and then I got into some other in the same line and decided to try it. And I did, and it took 9 months. But finally, I was laying on that bed of mine, and I was across the room looking back, and I got such a fright at actually seeing my human body laying on the bed that I went right back in, never tried it again.
Yeah, it does.
I want to, because I'm a great believer, and your guest there, is it Mrs. Atwater?
It's Dr. Atwater, right?
Oh, Dr. Atwater, okay. I got some clue maybe on these people that criticize and hate or say they hate your books or your stories or whatever. I went into this over a period of time. I think these are people that dislike or hate themselves in this life, and they're telling themselves mentally, I hope to God there's no such thing as a afterlife, and therefore they continuously deny that there could be such a thing because they don't want there to be such a thing. That's number one. Number two, anyone, and I'm not a doctor, but I have studied the human body inside every organ, including the brain, which I'm on at the present time, and anyone that knows how our bodies operate in every cell, every vessel, every vein, and do most of their jobs totally automatically and do so whether we're aware or not what is going on, there's no way, if they're being honest with themselves, that they could disbelieve that we go on and on and on and come back to learn new things, help new people, and make this world a better place, just like George said so many times. And by the way, George, I've been a listener since Art Bell and Richard C. Hoagland were discussing the building of the weather control station in Alaska, if you're familiar
with
that.
That's way back, yeah.
That is way back. If I am home, your program is on, and I'm going to get off here and let some other people on. If any commentary out of PM.
All right.
H. Atwater, I'd love to know what she thinks of that surmisal of mine on why these people are so critical of the possibility that we continue to go on and on and on. And I'll listen on the phone here.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Atwater. The stage is yours.
Oh, gee, you're so kind. Well, a lot of the reason why my work has been under attack for decades is because I use a different protocol. I use a different protocol than double-blind studies with a control group or questionnaires, because to my mind, they're not thorough enough, they're not deep enough, they're using language in advance of the experiencer. I do not consider either of those styles to be the kind of research protocol that I want to use that really gets into the heart of the matter, where I can really observe the individual. And so therefore, because I use a different protocol, you know, I'm automatically under attack. And, you know, it's been that way since day one. But this time I was puzzled because of the fact that people weren't really understanding the second half of the book. Mm-hmm. And maybe your friend is really absolutely right there, because in the second half of the book, that's where I'm getting deeply into the spiritual, and a lot of people still are in denial of the fact that we have a spirit, a soul, that we are indeed immortal beings, and that, you know, if you just look and consider the main phrase that most experiencers say after their experience, it's just four words, and those four words are always there is life. If you just look at that, thousands and thousands of people say that. Tens of thousands of people say that. Maybe even millions. I don't know. But those that I've certainly met up with and heard about. Always there is life. If you really look at that phrase, that means there is no before life. There is no afterlife. There is no now life. What it is saying is always there is life. In one form, in one dimension, in one space or another, always we have existed, always we will exist, because always we are here, we are life, and we will always be.
Do you think if someone dies in their sleep, that they get out of their body in whatever state they're in, the soul state, let's say, and they're a little confused for a moment on what's happened to them?
What oh, I've run think? Into a lot of those cases.
Yeah.
And I've written about them in several of my books. I think Beyond the Light, I talk about some of these where the person is supposedly asleep, but actually has a near-death experience, because in the sleep state, they actually die.
In the sleep state?
Yeah, in the sleep state, and then are able to revive. Sometimes they're rushed to the hospital and resuscitated, but they seem to be asleep when actually they really are dying or dead and having a near-death experience.
Do you think most scientists do not accept the principle of life after death?
Well, that's true. Because science denies that. Science is so arranged as to deny that. That's part of science. You know, one of the greatest thrills I've had, maybe about 4 or 5 years ago now, when the International Association of Near-Death Studies was having their yearly conference in Houston at those big, huge medical facilities. And it was the MD Anderson Cancer Center. And it's a center that will hold hundreds of people. And there must have been about 500-plus people there. And over two-thirds of them were doctors, nurses, chaplains, you know, oncology, all this mm-hmm. kind of thing. And the doctors were able to have an open mic. And doctor after doctor came up to that mic, some of them crying, and said, finally, we're able to talk about what really happens. We see spirits. We hear spirits. They tell us what to do. We pray. We pray as we're, you know, during surgery. And it's stops the blood. It helps the individual. We see the bodies rise up above the physical. I mean, the doctors are talking about the kinds of things you and I talk about, but you know, the lid is open. They have no constraints. They can finally be open and honest about their practice, what they see in surgery, what they see in the wards and up and down the halls all the time. And I'll tell you, our doctors are part of the paranormal. They are merged in with and participate in the paranormal all the time in their work.
Let's go to Jay in Miami, Florida. Squeeze you in here, Jay. Welcome to the program.
Oh, good morning, George. Big fan.
Thank you.
And thank you, madam, for your work with NDEs. Because my NDE is so long, I'm going to give you the Reader's Digest version.
Okay.
I was a policeman a few years ago, and I was ambushed, and I was left for dead on the side of the road. I did not have a belief system or anything, but I felt myself back in my apartment, and I thought I fell asleep on duty. Apparently, during this distress, I found myself back in at the scene, and unfortunately, I was put back in this Roman town, and I felt myself in the presence of a hooded figure. And it was a very dark NDE, by the way. And throughout the NDE, there was people covered in white canvas. I was told or I crossed over one of these white canvas people, and I felt myself inside my body, which I was in ICU for 2 weeks later. Could you tell me what that was? Because for 19 years, I've been trying to find out if it did happen or not. But it did change me.
Well, it sounds like it did happen. You know, and I'm so glad to be talking to another police officer. This is great. But yes, it did happen. It was a real event. Many people have dark experiences. That does not mean they're negative. Lots of people see a dark light instead of a bright or white light. They describe that light as being very warm and very loving and very helpful and very healing. A lot of people see hooded figures. That's also very common in a near-death experience. The fact that you saw bodies in white or beings in white, that is also very common in a near-death experience. So, yeah, it sounds to me like you had a typical near-death experience, although if I were researching your case, then I would want to know about the after effects, the physiological and psychological after effects. I would want to know even more about your case. But, you know, just from what I've heard, it sounds genuine.
It's a dandy of a case. PMH Atwater, thank you so much for being on the program. Good luck with the book. Near-death experiences, the rest of the story. And I wouldn't worry too much about people think about the rest of the story, because I've had 2 months to read your book, and it's fantastic. I'll be back in a moment. Open lines on Coast to Coast AM.